knew Francesco Bagnaia was a great fan of that clip from Family Feud with Steve Harvey in it. You know the one. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Do you have any idea how shockingly little that narrows it down?
Pie in the what? Hi, guys. Welcome to episode 507 of Motorsport 101.
I'm not gonna do that to Bagnaia's girlfriend.
We are a gang that absolutely watches our fair slice of Family Feud clips. Let's put it to you that way. RJ O'Connell's here. Hi, RJ. How's it going?
Hi, everyone. I actually got up bright and early to watch MotoGP race, and I was well. Though I did take away with some good things out of this race, which we'll get to in a second, before we get completely derailed with some stuff that we were doing in between episode recordings, as Indeed. We want to do.
We never get distracted on this show. Isn't that right, Cameron Buckley?
I actually am distracted about the Andy Murray news, and my whole body hurts.
Oh.
He hurt his ankle.
He hurt bad. All of his ankle. Every square centimeter of his ankle is hurt.
The whole thing went snap. Just poor guy, man. Honestly, we love Andy Murray on this show. One of the good ones out there in sports. And get well soon, big fella. Because, my God, that broke in between us recording episodes 506 and 507. That totally doesn't date this show, by the way. But in the meantime, we're here to talk a little bit about MotoGP's Portuguese Grand Prix, round two on the calendar on this one. And hey, remember Jorge Martin? Remember that guy that maybe should have won the championship last year? He's back. He's back, and he decided to run the goddamn field over on this one, dominating, pretty much leading from lights to flag. We'll get into more of that a little bit later. But there's a couple of big headlines to take away from this Grand Prix weekend because number one, everyone who was looking forward to a Bagnaia v. Marquez clash got their wish until the ending. And then everybody was sad and disappointed. More on that later. Pedro Acosta back on a Grand Prix podium as well. Well, the big one this time.
Well, first time on a top flight. He's been on plenty of the lower end ones.
Wait a minute. That wasn't supposed to happen this soon.
Well, it did.
It did. And we'll be talking about that over the course of the show as well. But I have the perfect thing to warm us up before we get into the show. Can I just say how delighted I am that Aaron Canet finally won a Moto2 race this weekend?
It's about damn time.
Yes! On his 70 years of trying, 70 starts of frustration, Aaron Canet finally wins a Moto2 race. For those who don't know, Aaron Canet had finished second in Moto2 15 times.
That's a lot of times, finishing second without winning a race.
15 times he finished second
in Moto2. Me, a Casey Kane fan in 2004.
Oh, 20 career Moto2 podiums. Finally got that first dub at the weekend. He was bawling his eyes out on the bike. He dedicated it to his family for putting up with his patience for so long, and smashed the winning sign over on the ground as well, in almost in like relief more than anything else. I was so happy for Aaron Canet. Really, really happy. One of the good dudes in bike racing. Often. I know people wanted him to talk about the bow tie, his famous bow tie, as to why he wore it, even though he said he one day he was going to reveal, if he ever won a race, why he wore one. He actually revealed it early last year when he said it's to try and mock the people that said I don't look a certain way, because he's always attested that he would have had a MotoGP seat by now if it wasn't for his large tattoos that cover the majority of his body. And in a bit of a show of defiance, he wears a pretend bow tie to pretend to be classy about the whole thing. I love that story. Congrats to Aaron Canet. I wouldn't surprise me to see him on a MotoGP bike next year. I look forward to that happening because he's one of the good dudes and one of the genuine charismatic riders that bike racing often needs. Anywho, before we get into our podcast, I'll tell you the places where you can find us real quick. We are on motorsport101.com, our website, if you want all of our written thoughts as well as some of our all of our podcasts as well are on the website. You can follow us on X, again, I can't believe I'm calling the X still, at DreHarrison101 and RJ O'Connell and at CBuckley917, Motorsport_101 for the pod. Motorsport101 pod on Instagram, and you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/Motorsport101. You can back us at the $5 level to get early access to all of our shows before they go live to the public, or you can even do it at a $10 level where you can get supporters club access to our Discord server and listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded. Thank you as always for your ongoing support. Without further ado, let's get into the Portuguese Grand Prix.
It was Jorge Martin's turn to remind us all of his quality. As the reigning vice champion, the championship runner-up, and the MotoGP World Championship led the Portuguese Grand Prix from lights to flag. After taking an excellent hole shot, he had Aprilia's Maverick Vinales keeping company for most of the race, but a late gearbox failure on his Aprilia flipped him off his seat, leading to Enea Bastianini taking second, and Pedro Acosta in third. Yes, really, more on him in a bit. But how impressive was Martin's win?
You know, this is what this guy can do. This is what we keep clamoring for from Jorge Martin when we know he is capable of running this field the hell over.
It's exactly what we know he can do at his very best. He's one of the very few riders in this sport, one of maybe only two or three who can completely take a race by the scruff of the neck and go dominate. Well, dominate is a relative term, given how close MotoGP is these days. I mean, what I mean by dominate really is take the lead, get the whole shot, pull out 0.8 of a second, and then just keep that 0.8 of a second gap.
You can control it. You can control the pace.
Yeah, he controlled he dictated the pace of the race. He forced riders who may have been a little bit quicker on certain laps, like as I know the lap record fell, Bagnaia had it at certain points, Bastianini did at certain points. I know Acosta was setting red times at a certain point as well. But Martin never looked like he was going to lose that race once he got to the front of the field. He was in complete control the whole way through. He didn't crack under pressure like he had done last year. Just a flawless ride. Just absolutely perfect.
And now he leads the championship by a mile and a stretch.
And he's going to lead it for more than 24 hours, which he has not done.
Yeah, he's now got an 18-point lead in the championship after this due to other reasons we'll get to later. But, I mean, I want to also pour out a little bit of empathy for Maverick Vinales, who won the sprint by the
Maverick Vinales won the sprint. He won an event that is structured like a race on an Aprilia.
It doesn't go down in the official stat book as a win, because if it did, Maverick would have made history as the first man ever in top flight motorcycle racing since 1949 to win with three different manufacturers. No one's ever done that. And depending on who you ask, is a sprint race a race? You be the judge at home, people. But he's won a race of some variety now on three different manufacturers. He was running second, just like last year. He was very strong last year. Oh, by the way, Maverick also had a nasty case of gastroenteritis. He was sick as a dog this weekend. Oh. He was giving interviews in a mask because he was just that afraid of making somebody else sick. He was sick as a dog, and he was running second the entire race. And then Aprilia's gearbox failed on the final lap.
Exploded.
He pulls
up. Tossed him off the bike.
He pulls up in the middle of the straightaway. He gets passed all of a sudden. And then we look around, and oh, he's flipped over.
Yeah.
He somersaulted the bike.
Yeah, Maverick, the story is that he tried to find sixth gear on the main straight. The gearbox wouldn't let him engage sixth gear. So he lost all that speed. He was redlining off in fifth gear. And when he got to turn one, he was trying to put the bike in second. Couldn't do so. It locked up the gearbox. The whole thing blew up and it just launched him off the bike. Horrible accident. Nasty stuff. Big technical problem for Aprilia. Maverick's taking it well, but Trey, another Aprilia technical DNF.
Yeah. It's since they've come to the fore, really, in the last two or three years, that has been the defining thing, along with all of their aero and all of their pace. The bike keeps blowing itself up.
Yeah, it's an ongoing problem with Aprilia. Their bike is seemingly very delicate in that, you know, it's fast, but if something goes wrong on the bike, it's normally catastrophic. They have more technical failures than any other manufacturer in MotoGP does. It's very bizarre that this is happening to them still, and it's cost them good points. This was 20, I should say. Very precious points for Aprilia as a manufacturer, because Aleix Espargaró was nowhere this weekend. Maverick was excellent all weekend long, and he only got the 9 points, and he got the 12 points for winning a sprint for it, rather than what could have been 32 for finishing second in the Grand Prix as well. Damn shame. But it promoted Enea Bastianini up to second. Great ride from Bastianini, by the way. Great job from him. Another very strong result from him. And like I mentioned, Pedro Acosta in third. Now, Pedro's podium was a little bit, shall we say, fortunate, because there was some attrition in front of him. Because we had, in my opinion, for the first time, the first big Marquez Bagnaia fight in a hot minute. And Marquez tried a dive at Bagnaia at turn five. Bagnaia was knocked off his rhythm because Pedro Acosta had finally passed him after staying in his wheelhouse for most of the race. Marquez tries a deep lunge into turn five. It's a very tricky corner. He goes wide, opens the door for a Bagnaia cutback. Bagnaia attempts the cutback. Maybe you could argue Marquez turns on the line a little bit. Bagnaia tucks the front, collects Marquez on the outside. Bagnaia's day is done. Marquez would go home in 16th, not scoring a point. Stewards deemed it a racing incident, but both men basically gave it the Spider-Man meme treatment of blaming the other for the incident. How do you
guys? It's a racing incident, and also it's entirely his fault.
Yeah, that was literally Bagnaia's argument. It was, this is a racing incident, but it's totally Marquez's fault. Love that.
I mean,
Mark did the same.
It's a disaster for Bagnaia, right? Because obviously, he loses further round in the championship. It's a disaster for Marquez because he's having very competitive weekends on Gresini that this one just went to waste. And I look at the incident itself, I'm just thinking, it is kind of one of those shitty deals. You could see what Bagnaia is trying to do. Marquez isn't going to leave room for him to just make the move because, every position counts.
How do you see it, Cam? You're the big biking guy.
I'm going to go walk outside and light myself on fire.
Can you tell that Cam Buckley is also a big backer in the talents of Francesco Bagnaia and Marc Marquez?
Yeah, so I back both of these guys, and they both fucked me on this one.
Both ways from Sunday. No, I mean, you first, Cam.
I think a racing incident is the correct call, because ultimately it was self-penalizing. Both of them effectively went out of the race. Mark remounted, but he didn't get points. If I'm going to call responsibility, I'll probably put it 65-35 Bagnaia. That's about as much as I go. They both kind of knew what they were doing. Neither of them wanted to yield, and the reason why I probably put a little bit more of it on Bagnaia is that he's the one trying to repass, and he can see where Mark is.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it's, as they would say over here in NASCAR land, one of them racing deals.
You think he tucks the front before they touch?
Maybe a little bit. They were both asking a lot of their bike to go through that corner side by side.
It's a close one. I think for me, it's right around the time there's contact. It's very close. A part of me thinks his front was already letting go by the time they make contact. Mostly because
he opened the gas and it pushed it. Like, if you look at the, it's very camera dependent, right?
Mm.
Because from the outside shot that I think a lot of people saw on the replay, it looks like a perfect 50-50.
Mm.
I think from behind, when Bagnaia picks the gas up, he goes a little bit wide. Mark is trying to cut a little bit in, And I think both of them were asking a lot of their front tire.
They were both over the limit.
They were both a little bit over the limit, but Benyai is the guy on the inside. He's a little bit tighter to the corner, and it's his front that lets go.
And with roughly, what, 3 laps to go, neither man is going to concede in that scenario, and understandably so. I mean, a part of me thinks, God damn, these 2024 bike regulations and the limits that these bikes are now racing on, these riders are now having to take hellacious amounts of risk to even attempt these kind of passes. The way MotoGP is now, you've got to basically have a nailed-on sitter of a pass to be able to overtake somebody now, because even if you're within 0.2, it's not guaranteed you can make the move anymore, because you don't want to get caught up in the braking line of another bike slipstream. So you've got to break your toe early to try and get ahead. And these bikes are all pretty marginal now on top speed. Like, there's not much difference between the Ducati and the KTM, or the Ducati and the Aprilia, or even the Ducati and the Honda, for example. They're all going at 215 miles an hour now down Portimao's front straight. So you can't do what you could do in the four-stroke or the early days of the 800s, where you could follow somebody all the way to the braking point and then slam the brakes on. You can't risk that anymore, because if you do...
So if you cross over someone's line, you're going to tuck the front, you're going to crash.
Yeah, Bez at Silverstone all over again, where Bez was in Dovi's slipstream and he yeeted himself off a copse. It was a horrible accident. I mean, yeah, it's... And I think the sport has suffered... We've talked about it on this show many a times, that I think the sport has suffered for it, but this is one of the more, shall we say, under-the-radar consequences of what we're dealing with here, is that it's made overtaking so much more difficult. And you've now got to really have a nailed-on sitter, or basically block past someone to get ahead of somebody now. Like, Marquez pulled the carbon copy of this move on Martin in the sprint to finish second in said sprint, and we all applauded him for it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very, very fine margins at the end of the day.
And two riders with a point to prove. Yeah, Mark, who's establishing himself. I mean, he was the only GP23 in the fight, and he was hammering everyone around him for pace. And you have Bagnaia, who's not only trying to mitigate any and all losses to Martin, because he knows he's in a year-long fight with Martin, because Martin's too fast to put away, as long as he doesn't dick around like he did to finish off last year. And they have a vested interest in not letting one another get a foothold on one another. Because these are the guys you're going to be fighting for the championship. Unfortunately, they both walked away with a goose egg. And Martin walked away. When you're being out-consistency'd by Jorge Martin for a weekend.
Bit of a wild one, that, isn't it? I mean, yeah. This was the first weekend that Bagnaia didn't have all the answers for the first time in a little while.
He was very messy.
He was sloppy. He didn't have consistent pace. He tried to break away from a group that had Pedro Acosta and Marc Marquez in it. Couldn't do it. Either he goosed his tires or was knocked off his rhythm when Acosta finally passed him. Not sure which one it was.
Could be a bit of both. On him. Acosta dueled with him to the death.
Yeah, and Acosta won the fight. And Bagnaia doesn't lose one-on-ones very often at all. He's an excellent head-to-head rider in combat, and when necessary, if you want to beat Bagnaia, you're going to have to go over the limit to beat him most of the time. And yeah, Bagnaia didn't have all the answers this weekend, and I think he was a little bit rattled by Acosta. And then when Marquez came along, yeah, Marquez was over the limit himself. He goosed it into turn 5. He ran wide. Bagnaia's got every right to go for the cutback, but if you're going to take that chance, there's a level of risk that comes with that if you're not going to concede that position. Mark is always going to take that line. He's trying to close the door on you. That's what any smart rider would do with 3 laps to go in a Grand Prix, you know? So it's absolutely a racing incident. But I think this is me being a bit, shall we say, tinfoil hat about this, and I don't normally go down this road. That couldn't have sat well in Ducati's camp, knowing that their money piece, the person that's you know, just signed another big 2-year extension to stay with Ducati for the next 2 years, is getting his shit kicked in by Marc Marquez. And apparently, from what I was on, for those who don't know, I edit the Tank Slappers podcast, which is also Autosports or Motorsport Network's MotoGP pod. Shout out to my man Lewis Duncan and Yuri Podjamont in there, two of the best in the biz out there. They said during that podcast, as I was editing it, that apparently Ducati wanted Bagnaia to address the media first so that he didn't say something out of pocket in response to Marquez, who blamed him entirely for the incident.
And by the way, while all this is happening, the rider who's not under contract through after this year and could easily walk away to pastures greener or not as greener.
There is
still
no greener pasture than the factory Ducati team. I'm sorry to inform.
But then again, he might walk out of this whole operation and you're just letting him skip away.
Yeah, I've heard again. I've had it doubled down to me off the record. This is Jorge Martin's last year with Pramac.
Oh, I wasn't even referencing him. I was referencing Bastianini having probably his best weekend short of Sepang last year in red.
No, I was thinking of Martin, though, because like he's also out of contract at the end of
the year. There's so many riders who aren't under contract for next year in Ducati's camp.
I need to point this out.
Ducati can only build so many bikes.
I need to point this out. Everybody on a Ducati is out of contract at the end of this season, except for Francesco Bagnaia.
And there's a guy who we found out in the break is under contract, and he's not even here yet.
Yeah,
Fermín Aldeguer has a 2-year contract to sign to ride a Desmo, wherever he ends up.
I would say as well, like a couple of things about that. It's a 2+2 deal. They've committed to 4 years of Fermín Aldeguer. They think he is the future. They have locked him down for 10
years. Forget writing that contract in pencil. They wrote that shit in Sharpie.
Sharpie. Permanent marker. You ain't getting rid of this shit. No chance. There's no stain. There's no chance this stain washes off. They've given Aldeguer a 2+2 deal, and allegedly it's with Pramac. They're not saying it on the record. It's Pramac.
It's gonna have factory equipment first day.
GP25 out of the box.
Frankie Morbidelli, it's been an honor.
I don't think it's for Frankie's seat.
I don't think if this is Jorge's last year in that team, then I don't think either of those riders are. I don't think either of those riders are staying.
It might be a deck clearer for all we
That's
know.
That's what I think.
I think there's definitely a possibility of that. Everything I've heard from my sources within multiple camps suggests this is Martin's last year with Pramac, no matter what. Either he goes to the factory Ducati team, and Gigi Ligna said for the first time this weekend, we'd like to keep Martin. So what does that
mean? Only way
to
go. Only way to go is up.
So what does that mean for Enea Bastianini? He is now riding for his job.
And he looked like it, because like Carlos Sainz over in Formula One,
holding up his end of the deal so far.
Yeah, if you write those checks, your ass better be able to cash them. And thus far, both Martin and Bastianini are.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about somebody who is also writing checks and cashing them. He has no problems letting these checks clear the bank. It's Pedro Acosta. He was the big winner out of that class, and he became the third youngest rider to stand on a Premier Class podium and the youngest ever to do it in all three classes. There are only two riders younger that have stood on a Premier Class podium, Eduardo Salatino at his home race in Argentina in 1962. He finished third. 19 years, 274 days. The leader, by 13 days, Randy Mamola, second in the 1979 Finnish Grand Prix.
Legendary.
Pedro Acosta does not turn 20 for another 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
How good is this kid?
Pretty damn.
Goddamn. It's like he learned tire management in real time.
There were some shots where it felt like, oh, he is doing the opposite of learning tire management. It felt like he brought his tires to the cord, and yet he didn't fall off that much.
It was like watching Brad Binder in Thailand last year when he was making shapes trying to beat Martin head to head.
Tying that bike in knots.
Yeah, he was on the limit, over the limit, but this time he was able to mitigate his tires, and this time he was actually able to control it, and he beat Francesco Bagnaia and Marc Marquez straight up. It was incredible in that sense. I was blown away by this performance. I'm struggling to find the words beyond holy shit, this dude is special.
You know, he also just beat all the other KTMs straight up. Jack Miller and Brad Binder finished ahead of him. Could you tell this is a second premier class race? Because I really couldn't.
It reminds me a lot of other, you know, because a lot of the truly elite alien riders of their time started really strong very quickly. Jorge Lorenzo famously got pole position on his debut when he got to the top flight. Pedrosa was all it was good right from the get-go.
That's kind of what it reminds me of, is that Pedrosa season in 06 where he came in and he was just mega from the start.
He was a title contender as a rookie. He was in contention until that infamous Estoril is another Portuguese moment in MotoGP history. At Estoril, we all know what happened there.
Still mad about it years later. Didn't affect a thing in the end.
No, but still reasons to be mad about it. But the truly great ones tend to be great the moment they walk through the front door in this category, and Acosta's absolutely qualified in that reign of competition. Like you said, if you're on the same bike as Brad Binder and Jack Miller and you're beating them straight up in your second ever premier class race, these are not scrubs. Jack Miller genuinely rode well this weekend. This was not one of his disaster class weekends. Binder is a damn good bike rider. He was fourth in the championship last year and the best in the sport that wasn't on a Ducati last year, and he was beaten straight up by a 19-year-old. Like, holy hell, this kid is special. Spain's found another one, relatively out of nowhere, and that is scary for me. We haven't even talked about Fermín Aldeguer all that much on this podcast very often, but Spain could have two juggernauts coming forward in the next 2 years. It's crazy. It's like Spain have seen Italy's dominance. It's like, we're taking this shit personally. We let Fabio win a world title? Nah, we can't be having this.
Well, when Fabio Quartararo's post-race interview from Qatar started with, it is what it is. might win a... that we should make that into an award on our show. The It Is What It Is award.
The Is What It Is. I'm going to have to consider that and see what we can tie that together, because it does sound like it fits. I mean, Yamaha was meant to test this weekend as well on Monday, but washout, basically.
Six laps! Six whole ass laps on their new aero package.
Nah, that's it tough, could be isn't worse.
Is that good?
It could be a lot worse. It could be Honda.
Oh.
We're horrible this weekend. Luca Marini, I'm sorry. You did not deserve to suffer in such a cold, lonely place as the RC213V.
You know what happened again here? This was exactly like last year for Honda, where they were in Qatar, it wasn't too bad, there was some genuine optimism, in the same way that, hey, Honda's, you know, maybe not quite as bad as it was last year in Qatar, they were running, like, you know, lower end of the points, which is a small improvement on where they were, and I'm like, okay, there's optimism here. They go to Portimao and they get their cheeks clapped. They were the bottom four spots in qualifying.
Trey, this might be in a horrible era for them, this might be the worst they've looked during their nadir.
How? How does the bar get any lower?
I don't know, man. It's so bad. And this was the weekend where they were expecting to get better, and instead, I mean, Yamaha blew them away.
Yeah, Fabio Quartararo, to be fair, put in a shift to finish seventh. Like, I know, again, a bit of attrition at the front, but the man was riding his nuts off to get that finish. Like, that was one of them. We all applauded that on our Discord server because we all knew what an effort he'd put in there to even get that out of Yamaha. Fabio is not happy. You know, he was asking him about his future during the, you know, during the media circles on Thursday. And he said, look, I'm not going to mess about when it comes to making the decision. You will hear from me when you need to know about this. Remember, the man doesn't have an agent anymore. So, yeah, we'll know pretty soon, apparently, about Fabio's future. I stand by what I said in this podcast after Qatar. Justin Marks, how big is your checkbook?
Not big enough to get two 2024 Aprilias, because Raul Fernandez on the 2023 bike, again, in the Temple of Suffering.
I stand by it. Maybe if you give up on the Raul Fernandez experiment, a coupe for one of the best riders in the world, would that not be the kind of coupe that Justin Marks would pull off?
Yes, but he better get him on some current equipment.
Oh, he will. No doubt about that.
Fucking like, better.
I stand by it. I think he's on a track house next year. I could just see him on a track house and then milking that for all it's worth on social media. They'd be massive on that.
Is this conceding our preseason bet that he's going to leave Yamaha?
Might be.
I'll take that win.
Hope I'm wrong for this, but I also kind of hope I'm right because it is for a good cause. So,
I hope I'm right just so he gets out of that horrible, horrible bike.
So yeah, that was pretty much it for MotoGP in Portimao. Like, not the most newsworthy of weekends, but certainly an intriguing one nonetheless. Again, Aaron Canet winning in Moto2. Shout out to our American friend Joe Roberts as well, who finished second in that race. He loves Portimao. One previous winner there, now got a second to go with it as well.
Superbikes apparently hit a banger.
Oh, God.
Oh, they did. Toprak is him.
Again.
My man pulled off the Valentino Rossi move into the final corner at Catalunya to win the Super Pole race against Alvaro Bautista. Won a race, won the Super Pole race as well. Toprak is him. What a man, honestly. Absolutely bonkers. Also, I didn't mention this in the set list, but I think it's worth mentioning because of the rumors that have regarded it. Cam, how do you feel about the possibility of BMW going to MotoGP in 2027? Because allegedly there are rumors that there's some genuine smoke around this.
If they put the M4 grill on a motorcycle, I'm blowing up all of their quadrants. Dre.
Yes.
Is Jonathan Rea cooked?
I'll tell you a little story, Cam. Mm-hmm. I'll be candid about this.
You've got no points.
When I sat next to Simon Patterson at the race, from the race at Silverstone last year, he was watching while Superbikes along with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll hopefully say this on the record, and I hope if Simon, you're listening, anyone in the race is listening, I promise you this is in good faith. He had texts from people that was working at Yamaha, the Yamaha World Superbike team at the time. Mm-hmm. And I distinctively remember him showing me the text saying that he was like, and I think the text read something along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing here, Jonathan is about to find out just how fucking good a rider Toprak actually is. Mm-hmm. Because if he thinks he can walk into that Yamaha and suddenly win with it like Toprak was, he's going to be sadly mistaken. Everything he said has turned out to be true.
I mean, he's got no points through the second round.
Yeah, that Yamaha is nowhere right now. Not in his hands anyway. Locatelli and Dominique Agata have still had half decent performances on it, but Jonathan is just struggling with this damn thing. He might be cooked. Like, It's not nice. It's like I have a lot of respect for Jonathan Rea. He's the greatest World Superbike rider of all time, without question. But this might be one miracle too many for him, because that Yamaha in his hands is not performing right now. It's actually quite alarming how off the pace he is right now, because at the moment it's Bautista, Toprak, Nicolò Bugler is having a fantastic start to the season as well on that second Ducati. Ducati's finally got a more well-rounded rider lineup, because Budiger's been very, very good to start his career as well. Even Alex Lowes is still a Philip Myland specialist on that Kawasaki. Jonathan Rea is nowhere. That's alarming, man. That's alarming. Although, like, I do wonder if BMW can have a genuine contender in Toprak for this year, would that encourage him to maybe give MotoGP a shot? Because, again, the race reported that rumor last week, and I was very intrigued by it.
If that's his ticket in, and keep in mind, this would be for new tech regulations coming in around that time for MotoGP.
Yeah, 2027. Yeah.
That'd be really interesting to see how he gets on beyond the Yamaha camp, given the lack of a fair shake that they gave him.
Is BMW prepared to spend 70, 80 million a year to make this happen? I do wonder, because it's expensive getting into MotoGP now. It's 10 times what it is in World Superbikes. Easy.
Well, they've got a superbike that's basically got everything you can make carbon fiber out of carbon fiber. And they're willing to spend money to be awful in endurance racing prototypes thus far. You never know.
I don't know. It's an interesting one. From what I've read, there seems to be genuine smoke regarding this rumor that BMW wants to expand its motorsport range again. They are very expandy and contracty, BMW, when it comes to their motorsport presence.
Well, they always have been.
Yeah. It's like inflating and deflating a balloon rapidly. But apparently there is interest, and apparently Dorna still is hanging on to the grid slots that Suzuki used to have when they left in 2022. And are saving them for a factory team to come in. That could be the one. Just a thought.
Well, it wasn't going to be Harley Davidson now, was it?
Probably not, no.
Hey, Suzuki's fine just running a carbon-neutral fuel superbike at the 8 hours.
As you do.
And they can get these hands at the one motorcycle race left where Honda has hands.
MotoGP will be back in 3 weeks' time, sadly, because we'll be talking about Argentina, but sadly it's not happening this year. So we've got an extra week out. We'll be back at the Circuit of the Americas in 3 weeks' time. I wonder if a certain well-performing Marc Marquez might be a favorite for the win on that one. Just throwing that one out there.
You owe me. I've caped for you all these years.
Knowing how the NASCAR race went this weekend, we'll probably just do all this hype for another William Byron win.
Your Pocosis got bullied by Rick Hendrick. I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell and Cam Buckley. We'll see you next week, maybe to talk about Formula E in Tokyo. We'll have to wait and see how that goes. A bit of a quiet couple of weeks in motorsport for us right now, but we'll see how it goes in Tokyo.
Probably a good thing for all of us, given how the opening stanza of the season has gone in every series we follow.
Yeah, it's not been great out here, folks. We're not going to lie to you, but hopefully... We live in hope that Formula E can give us something in Tokyo. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison, they've been RJ O'Connell and Cam Buckley. We will see you all next time. Thank you very much for listening. Sayonara.
Ciao, ne?
So how do you LS swap a MotoGP bike and get Hendrick in on this?